Welcome to WISO Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Very pleased to be with you this Sunday morning. Coming up on today's program, we've got Dayton Youth Radio and Senior Voices. And in just a few minutes, Yellow Springs High School teacher Kevin Leidy will tell us about Dayton's sister city relationship with WYSO Japan. Up first, a nonprofit focused on attracting and retaining young creatives in Dayton has a new director. Miami Valley entrepreneur Lauren White will lead Up Dayton as it marks its 10th anniversary this year. In this profile, WYSO's Sheila Raghavendran looks at Up Dayton's impact so far and how the group's mission has evolved.
About 10 years ago, Up Dayton was little more than a thought bubble. A group of seven young people came together in Dayton. Some were born here, others were newer to the city. All of them wanted to change what they saw as the perception of Dayton, which wasn't very good at the time. The region was reeling from job losses and the Great Recession. A.J. Ferguson was Up Dayton's most recent director.
Up Dayton's central mission is get people involved and let them find their cause.
The idea behind the group's formation was simple, getting young people more involved in their city. Up Dayton founders figured encouraging young talent would have a ripple effect in helping to create the city they wanted. Ferguson says Up Dayton supports volunteers or potential leaders who are passionate about making change in Dayton.
If we don't have a leader stepping up saying they want to get that done, that probably means we're not in a position to do an effective project in that category.
Ferguson says after their involvement with Up Dayton, many volunteers go on to make their mark leading other Dayton organizations. Some find their start at Up Dayton's annual summit. That's where volunteers present their proposals for projects to improve the city, and the summit audience votes for their favorites. Up Dayton backs winning volunteer projects with funding it collects through donations. Past summit winners include projects focused on children, education, or the arts. One of this year's successful projects is a memorial mural dedicated to people lost to opioids. Another recent winner was The Longest Table, a recurring event where Daytonians can share a meal at a huge table. Up Dayton co-founder Scott Murphy says encouraging young talent to take action in Dayton has had an impact. Many young people used to leave Dayton, feeling like there were no opportunities here. But Murphy says he's seen a change in how young people view the city.
People are really feeling good about where things are heading. That's the case for the first time in a long, long time for Dayton. It's a very different environment from where we started, 2007, 2008.
Back then, Murphy says Dayton was in a rut. The city was in decline. But things have improved since then. Other things have also changed. Murphy says a decade ago, most of Up Dayton's projects were downtown focused. Now, more projects branch out into the city's other neighborhoods. Michelle Tan is Up Dayton's board chair. She says Up Dayton wanted to understand what generally makes people want to stay somewhere, and research showed there were three main drivers.
Where you work, where you live, who are you connected to? And so what Up Dayton really tries to do is to connect the dots between those three.
Tan says a few years ago the group ran a survey to see how people in Dayton felt about those key factors.
What we found was that people felt actually relatively good about all three, and probably the strongest connection point there was with their community.
Tan says the survey revealed what they hoped. People felt pretty good about their Dayton community. She says Up Dayton hopes to continue retaining and attracting more young professionals. Census numbers show Dayton's population of people ages 20 to 34 rose only slightly between 2010 and 2016. Tan says the biggest impact has been visible in the young professional community Up Dayton fosters.
So it's not just about getting young professionals to stay or, what can we do on a smaller scale? It's about how do we change the vision of what the Dayton area is and get people to really buy into that.
Up Dayton is celebrating its 10-year anniversary this year. Tan says the group is building on what they've started. Leaders hope to continue getting young people involved in the city so they can become leaders and keep improving Dayton. For WYSO, I'm news intern Sheila Raghavendran.
This story is part of WYSO's Scratch Innovation Series on business and the economy. To see more, visit us at WYSO.org. This year marks the 50th anniversary of Dayton, Ohio's sister city relationship with OISO Japan. And next summer, officials will welcome a delegation from OISO to the city. In this interview with WYSO, Kevin Leidy, the current chair of the Dayton OISO Sister City Committee, tells us about those next summer plans and tells us how sister city relationships begin. So, Kevin, thanks for speaking with us today. And I don't think that most people here locally are aware that we do have a sister city.
Yes, we actually have – Dayton has five sister cities around the globe, the oldest of which is Augsburg, Germany. That was established in 1964. OISO, Japan is our second oldest in 1968. And then we have three others, Holon, Israel, Sarajevo in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and then Monrovia in Liberia. So five cities.
The committee you're on, do you deal with all five?
I'm on the committee, and so yes, I deal with all five of the cities, but my focus is on the sister city relationship with OISO, Japan. It's in Kanagawa Prefecture, which is about an hour and a half west of Tokyo.
Great. So we'll talk about that city. I want to know what defines a sister city and how are they chosen?
A lot of it, I will say that the majority of our sister city relationships began with the relationship that was established with NCR when NCR was in Dayton. They had connections both in Augsburg and in OISO. And so NCR really helped facilitate that sister city relationship. A lot of what it entailed was either adult or student exchanges where adults would go over, learn a little bit about those cultures. It's really about fostering relationships, about fostering understanding, and just kind of broadening people's experiences of this world as opposed to being landlocked into a particular city.
Have you been to OISO?
I've been to OISO three times now. The first time was back in 2014. Nobody from Dayton had been to OISO for about 14 years. And so we tried to resuscitate that relationship. The relationship with OISO began in 1968, and it was pretty consistent all the way up until the early 2000s when things just kind of petered out. So there was a big concerted effort in about 2012, 2013. We had a delegation come from OISO to reestablish the relationship, and they sent two OISO high school students to do a homestay experience in 2013. 2014, an adult delegation included myself and the former chair of the OISO committee, Brink Harrison, to OISO just to reconnect and reestablish it.
Can you give us a personal feel for the city, you know, some of the highlights, some of the challenges they may be facing?
OISO is a beachside town. It is a beach resort. It is a very heavily traveled-to destination. It is very small, especially compared to Dayton. They're in the tens of thousands in a population, which is very small. So financially, they don't have a lot of industry. They're a tourist town, but there's not a lot of manufacturing or other things like that. So they're struggling in trying to attract businesses to the area as well. But it's a beautiful location. We got to go into the mayor's office, and right out his window is the Pacific Ocean. So it's a beautiful, beautiful town to visit.
Kind of sounds like a very picturesque place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Japan, I've been infatuated with Japan for about 20-some years. I lived there for 2 years north of Tokyo. I've never been to this part of Japan. I wouldn't say even just the architecture, but just the people in general, the culture is so welcoming and gracious. They go out of their way to make sure that you feel welcomed, that you are being treated carefully and with kindness. It's just such a wonderful people to actually be surrounded by and to be, I guess, gracious hosts to. Yeah.
Well, were you working in education during your 2 years there?
Yeah, I was a teacher of English of a foreign language in junior high schools. And so I had my teaching license. I graduated from Wittenberg and had my teaching license and went right to Japan to teach English as a foreign language. So I got my legs under me with teaching students in Japan how to speak English.
So we actually have a delegation coming here, or a group coming here next year.
Next year, yes. So this year we went to OISO. It was the 50th anniversary. So 1968 was the year the official agreement was signed, but nobody really went and did anything until 1969. And so we're using this whole year to celebrate the 50th anniversary. Mayor Whaley and City Manager Dick Steen traveled to OISO this past summer and spent about 9 days, 7 or 8 days there in OISO, just immersing themselves in the culture. And we want to, you know, extend the same opportunity to the OISO mayor and some of the other city officials in OISO as well. So we're planning a big celebration when they come in August of next year.
Did you get to talk to them about their impressions of the city?
Yeah, they have nothing but good things to say. I mean, every time I brought up the subject of them, they just couldn't imagine a more wonderful experience, a more well-rounded experience. Just every time they did something, they were bending over backwards to make sure that we felt welcomed and that they were accommodating for us.
The group that's coming here next summer, mm-hmm. high school students?
We're hoping the last couple years we've had 2 to 3 Japanese students from Oiso come and stay with host families, students from the Dayton area. And then this will be, since 2012, we haven't had any adults from Oiso come to visit. So we're hoping that they'll have a sizable delegation coming in, you know, maybe 4 or 5 adults, particularly the mayor. We're very interested in having the mayor of Oiso come and visit.
Oh, terrific. So you've got almost a year to hammer out the logistics of this?
Yes. So we're looking – right now we have a subcommittee of the Oiso Committee planning out the 50th anniversary event. Right now we're looking at a celebratory thing to invite the entire city of Dayton to not only recognize the 50th anniversary of the Oiso relationship, as you mentioned earlier, to bring awareness of all the sister cities that Dayton has and to bring awareness of that. So we're looking to tap into the new Levitt Pavilion. We're trying to get on their schedule. We're still negotiating that. They don't really have a schedule yet for next year, and so we're waiting to see when we can negotiate that opportunity. But we're looking forward to taking them to a Dragons game, to Carillon Historical Park, the Air Force Museum, give them the whole Dayton experience as much as we can.
And Kevin, with the bigger 50th anniversary events coming up next year and the visit from Oiso, Japan, mm-hmm. tell me how people can find out a little bit more about our sister cities and Oiso in particular.
Okay, well, we have 2 places that you can go. Obviously, the first place is our website. We have DaytonSisterCityCommittee.org. We also have a pretty active Facebook page where we update with pictures of events and things that we're doing. We have pictures from past student exchanges, from adult delegations. So you can find out a lot about upcoming events and things on Facebook. Looking at the history of the committee and just a little bit more about the different places, you can go to our website.
Kevin Leidy, U.S. History and Government teacher at Yellow Springs High School and also on the Dayton Sister City Committee, working on these projects with our sister city in Oiso, Japan. Kevin, thanks so much for your time and information.
No problem. Thank you.
I'm Jerry Kenny. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958, thanks to generous listeners like you. We've got more on the way.
I'm Noelle King, host of Morning Edition. There's a long list of things we need in order to bring you Morning Edition every day. Let's see, there's the Grande Light No Foam Latte for David Green. Oh, wait, that's the wrong list. Our real list includes reporters and editors around the globe, analysts and satellites and producers. How can you help with that list? You can donate your old car to this station. We'll turn it into the programs you love.
Learn more about donating your vehicle at WYSO.org.
Waltzes, reels, hoedowns, jigs, schottisches. There's a long history of dance fiddling in this country. Let's explore it together, shall we? A Country Ramble, Sunday evenings at 6 on the Miami Valley's member-supported community radio station, 91.3 FM WYSO.
This is WYSO Weekend on WYSO. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Jerry Kenny. Sometimes faith is as simple as sitting down and talking with someone. In today's Dayton Youth Radio, Basim Blunt brings us a story of a father and son who did just that. And then the son, Andrew Ward, wrote about it.
It's no secret that Andrew's father drank. But more than a year ago, everything changed.
My mom kicked my dad out April 27th, 2017. My father was alcoholic for most of my life. He would come home from work and drink beer and rum until he passed out. My mother told my dad he had to complete 90 AA meetings in 90 days. He loved his family and was, and still is, well-respected by the community. However, he could not resist the temptation of escaping reality by using alcohol.
All right, this is Drew Ward, and what is your name?
Jeremy Ward.
Last year around the spring, Mom kicked you out of the house. How did that make you feel?
It was by far one of the worst days of my life, understanding that at that point in time, I had lost my family.
How much did alcoholism play a part of that?
Well, it had everything to do with being asked to leave, unfortunately. Some I have been struggling with for a long time, and things basically came to a head.
I got home from a lacrosse game and saw him passed out and slumped over on the couch. He was in his usual night attire, a t-shirt and underwear. I did not think anything of it until I picked up his cup. As soon as the rum hit my mouth, I spat it out. It left a burning and poignant sensation.
How long did you struggle with alcoholism?
I struggled with alcoholism all the way back when I was in high school. And I just kept drinking, was the life of the party. I never was mean or hateful. And then it just continued to get worse.
When Mom decided to finally get the divorce, how did that make you feel?
Devastated. Of course, I tried to talk her out of it. It really hurt and stung, and it still does. I mean, every day I wake up and I'm reminded that I have lost a marriage through this.
I was so upset with my earthly father, but mostly I loathed my heavenly father. Growing up, my family was religious. We attended church, and all of us had a relationship with Jesus. But I was young, and I did not know him on an intimate level. The situation with my parents allowed me to connect and feel the love of God on a personal level. After my parents split, my dad got better. He attended AA meetings every day. This, and talking to his sponsor, got his life back on track.
Once I entered the program called AA, I really understood that I had to give my life and my will over to a higher power who I choose to call God.
Did you end up completing the program?
I did. The program was 90 days of sobriety with 90 meetings, and I went to a total of 117 meetings in 90 days. I wouldn't trade where my life is right now. Obviously, I wish that my ex-wife, Heather, was still my wife. That is the one thing I wish still were true. I do miss my marriage, though, but I do know that God takes us through circumstances, and He will see me and my family through this.
Before we go, I just want to say that I'm proud of you and seeing you come so far. I think I've learned a lot from you, and I think God has shown me a lot through you and just how He can change people's lives for the better. And I love you.
Love you too, Drew.
My dad went from someone who only lived to drink to someone who loves others. I had gone to church and believed in God, but now I trusted God and gave my whole self to Him. This year marks my dad being 1 year sober. This is an amazing feat, because now I get to live with him, and we are close. I tell him things that only my best friends know. For Dayton Youth Radio at Bellbrook, this is Drew Ward.
That's a story entitled Insert Smile Emoji, written and produced by Andrew Ward, a senior at Bellbrook High School. Special thanks to Andrew's teacher, Katie Bills-Tenney. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council. In a previous Senior Voices segment, Andy Hines described his experience being among the first students involved in the desegregation of Dayton City schools. His interview with Dayton Metro Library volunteer Nancy Messer also captured his memories of the famous small airplanes that were built in Troy, Ohio.
I grew up in a family that was heavily involved in aviation. My father was a pilot from before World War II all the way through World War II and right up actually till the time that he passed away. Both my brothers are pilots, and I'm a pilot, and we restored antique airplanes. And so it was an interesting life, and I can remember my mom's mother. She was a seamstress. I can remember her coming to the house, and all these aircraft that we rebuilt are fabric covered. I can remember her on her back sewing the fabric envelopes onto the airplanes, you know, out in the garage. Because once you cover the aircraft with fabric, then you put what's called butyrate dope on it. Well, if you have extended periods of time exposed to that, you become high. And so they would be out in the garage, you know, and then it'd be like they were drunk coming in the house and laughing and giggling, and my father as well, and of course my grandmother on her back out in the garage. The type of airplanes that we rebuilt were called Waco aircraft, and they were built in Troy, Ohio. They were the largest producer of airplanes in the United States from the late 20s all the way through the 30s. Waco quit building airplanes in about 1947. But they remained in business and did subcontracting work and that type of thing. Well, the company actually went out of business then, about 1965. The company and all the buildings and everything, which are all still in Troy, Ohio, it's where the B.F. Goodrich plant is, they held an auction. Well, of course, my family went up there and came back with lots of things, including three airplanes that had never been sold by Waco. And so we had three of these airplanes in our yard. Well, you know, I became the most popular kid because I had the coolest toys for everybody to come play in, you know. And so that's something, you know, that I'll never forget.
Andy Hines' childhood experiences with airplanes led to a lifetime spent working in the aviation industry. Today, he is the president of the National Waco Club, which holds an annual reunion of enthusiasts. He was interviewed for Senior Voices by Nancy Messer. This interview was edited by Community Voices producer Dave Barber. Senior Voices is a collaboration between the Dayton Metro Library, Rebuilding Together Dayton, and WYSO. The series is made possible through the generous support of the Delmar Healthcare Fund of the Dayton Foundation. I'm Jerry Kenny. You're listening to WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks for joining us. As you know, WYSO went on the air 60 years ago, and we're listening back to audio from our collection. Here's WYSO General Manager Nina Ellis.
On September 15th, 1963, white supremacists bombed the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama. 22 people were injured and 4 little girls were killed. This act of terror 55 years ago was a turning point in the civil rights movement, and communities across the country held memorial services to honor the dead and galvanize their commitments to racial equality. 1 week after the bombing, a somber march was held in Yellow Springs. WYSO reporter Bruce Havens was there.
The marchers passed down the main street of town through the business district and then headed down a residential side street. The mile-long march terminated at the Yellow Springs Municipal Building. Leaders counted 432 Yellow Springs residents in the line of march. Included were local ministers, corporation executives, and village officials. At the Village Municipal Building, a memorial service was held for the 4 Negro children killed in the Birmingham, Alabama church bombing. After the invocation was delivered by Reverend Franklin Holt, Walter Anderson, professor of music at Antioch College, led the marchers in singing.
We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. Soldier of the cross. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Former Antioch College professor Walter Anderson, along with villagers in Yellow Springs, as they held a memorial service for the four children killed in the Birmingham church bombing. I'm WISO General Manager Nina Ellis.
And you can check out more archival moments on our website at wyso.org.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first week of early fall, the first full week of the jumping jump seed moon, and the fourth week of the sun in Virgo. Among the many signs of summer's end, the maturing of the jump seed plant is one of the more dependable. In full bloom, it attracts clusters of cabbage white butterflies that play and court around it. And when its inconspicuous white flowers have turned to brittle seeds and jump to the ground as you run your thumb and forefinger up the stem, then the first week of early fall really has arrived. When jump seeds jump, bright patches of scarlet sumac and Virginia creeper mark the fence rows, and streaks of gold appear on the silver olive bushes. Hickory nutting season opens as sweet corn time winds down. Black walnuts already cover the ground under the larger walnut trees. Burrs from the thick trefoil stick to pants legs and stockings. Lizard's tail drops its leaves into the creeks and sloughs. And beside the deer paths of the forest, the undergrowth is tattered and cluttered with the remnants of the year. Firefly larvae flicker in the grass. The adult fireflies gone. Red-headed woodpeckers and red-winged blackbirds and house wrens, scarlet tanagers, indigo buntings, eastern bluebirds, and black ducks migrate. Cardinal songs are rare in the morning, but the rasping and buzzing and chirping of katydids and crickets fill the nights. Sometimes great swarms of dragonflies migrate across the land. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the second week of early fall. In the meantime, go outside at night and listen for the insect chorus. It will tell you that the jump seeds are jumping. Poor Will's Almanac and Horoscope for 2019 is now available. Order your copy from Amazon.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at wyso.org.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958, thanks to generous listeners like you. I'm Jerry Kenney. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Coming up next on WISO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.